ஓம் ஹரிஹி ஓம் தத் சத் ஸ்ரீ குருப்யோ நமஹ. ஹரிஹி ஓம். ஓம் சதா சிவ சமாரம்பாம் வ்யாஸ சங்கர மத்யமாம் அஸ்மதாச்சார்ய பர்யந்தாம் வந்தே குரு பரம்பராம். ஸ்ருதி ஸ்மிருதி புராணானாம் ஆலயம் கருணாலயம் நமாமி பகவத் பாதம் சங்கரம் லோக சங்கரம் சங்கரம் சங்கராச்சாரியம் கேசவம் பாதராயணம். சூத்ர பாஷ்ய க்ருதௌ வந்தே பகவந்தௌ புனஃப் புனஃ. ஓம் ஹரிஹி ஓம் தத் சத் ஸ்ரீ குருப்யோ நமஹ. ஹரிஹி ஓம். ஓம் சஹனாவவது சஹனௌ புனக்து சஹ வீர்யங்கரவாவஹை தேஜஸ்வினாவதீதமஸ்து மா வித்விஷாவஹை. ஓம் சாந்தி சாந்தி சாந்திஹ. இன் திஸ் பிரகரண கிரந்தஹ வி பீன் சீயிங் வேதாந்த சாரஹ. தி டீச்சர் பிகின்ஸ் வித் மங்களாச்சரணம், which is followed by the introduction of the Anubandha Chatushtayam. Every class I am repeating here so that you will get correct Sanskrit words. In Anubandha Chatushtayam is a set of four factors required for understanding the text. And there, the first factor called Adhikari, the eligible student, the one who is qualified for the pursuit of knowledge, the one who is qualified for the knowledge, is discussed, wherein the author presents how a student becomes qualified, and the one who is qualified is the one who has fourfold qualifications. And of those fourfold qualifications, we have to see today the first, Nitya Anitya Vastu Vivekaha, the discriminative understanding. The second qualification is the dispassion. The third qualification involves sixfold disciplines. And the fourth qualification is the mumukshutvam, the urge for mokshaha, the desire for freedom, mukshutvam, which I introduced these four in the very beginning of the class, not this class, in the beginning of the text itself. But here the teacher himself is going to introduce and discuss those fourfold qualifications. So we are going straight to those. Some of you might have already heard from the textbook called Tattva Bodha. Some of you might have heard me briefing it in the very beginning of this text. And then without taking it as a repetition, and see, this is discussed in the very textbook here. Last class we also saw how the performance of Nitya Karma, the compulsory duties, the performance of Naimittikam Karma, the karmas we performed for a given purpose, and also omission or the avoidance of the prohibited actions and the kamya karmas contribute for mental preparedness in terms of mental purity, and also the practice of meditation contributes for the mental steadiness. And these two qualifications, mental purity and mental steadiness, known as antahkarana shuddhi and antahkarana naischalyam, required for the pursuit of knowledge. And here we elaborately discussed last class also the difference between meditation, contemplation and concentration. And here, as a sadhanam, as a means required for mental steadiness or for having focused attention, it is not the concentration, it is not the nididhyasanam or contemplation prescribed here. So meditation is prescribed for mental steadiness. I said last class, contemplation is a mental activity, therefore meditation. But meditation, even though mental activity, is not contemplation. As a difference, I'm sure it must have become very clear for you last class itself. So having discussed all those things very clearly, now we have to enter into the fourfold qualifications. These qualifications are discussed here so that we'll understand whether we are qualified or not. If we are not qualified, so that we can make efforts to become qualified. Not to decide that, knowing the qualifications, I do not have these qualifications, so I am not qualified for knowledge, therefore let me not continue my studies. Such wrong decision should not be made here. It is not for such decision. It is for developing, it is for us to make efforts to become qualified. Make efforts to have those qualifications. Okay. Look at this now. It comes the 15th sentence. Sadhanani. Can you see? Sadhanani. Sadhanam itself is what? Any instrument is called a sadhanam. A means is called a sadhanam. The means of achievement is called sadhanam. Sadhakaha is the achiever. The one who wants to achieve, the one who wants to know the truth is a sadhakaha. One who wants to attain the knowledge of the truth is a sadhakaha. And sadhyam is the truth which has to be attained in terms of knowledge. So attainment of the knowledge of the truth is the sadhyam. And here sadhanam is the means of attainment of the knowledge. That's why sadhanam here is said to be the qualification which serves as a means of the attainment of the knowledge. And here the doubt might come. You said the means of knowledge. You know very well the knowledge is ultimately for moksha. We are not mechanically simply interested in the knowledge of the truth. We are interested in moksha, the freedom from limitations. And here, knowledge happens to be the means, the only means of moksha. So now our knowledge itself happens to be the moksha. Knowledge being identical with the moksha, knowledge itself becomes the ultimate choiceless end. Therefore, we are committed to the pursuit of this knowledge. And for that knowledge, of course, Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam are the, you know, for Jnanam, we say Jnana Yogaha is the Sadhanam. We have understood very clearly. For Jnanam, Jnana Yogaha is the Sadhanam. Pursuit of knowledge is the means of the attainment of knowledge. So the pursuit of knowledge, Jnana Yogaha, involves Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam, respectively. No, continuously. Shravanam is the first step, and Mananam follows, and Nididhyasanam is possible only after Shravanam and Mananam. And these three steps involved in the pursuit of knowledge will ultimately, finally result in the attainment of the ascertained, clear, doubt-free vision of the truth. So Jnana Yoga alone is said to be the direct means of knowledge of the truth. So Jnana Yoga, otherwise called pursuit of knowledge involving three steps, alone is the direct means of knowledge. But for this Shravanam, Mananam and Nididhyasanam to be effective, we need to be mentally prepared, and that preparation required for the pursuit of knowledge is Antakarna Shuddhi and Antakarna Naischalyam. Without the mental preparation, the Shravanam will not be effective, Mananam will not be possible, therefore Nididhyasanam will not be possible also. Therefore, now these qualifications he discussed here, therefore this qualification also is what now serves as an indirect means for knowledge. So Sakshat Sadhanam is what? Jnana Yogaha. For Jnanam, which involves three steps, Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. But for that sadhanam to become effective, you need to be prepared mentally. Therefore, here, this mental qualification, further qualification, and for the pursuit of knowledge, how should I be qualified? So those fourfold qualifications are required. Okay? Discussed here. Look at this. Nitya Nitya Vastu Viveka. So one long sentence. It is not given like in Tattvabodha. Iha Mutrartha Phala Bhoga Viraga Shamadi Shatka Sampatti Mukshutvani. All the fourfold qualifications are given in one long sentence. Now let us separate each qualification and understand. So, now the teacher himself explains each of them. The 16th sentence. Now first he says, Nitya Nitya Vastu Vivekastavad. Nityanitya Vastu Vivekastavat. He says, Nityanitya Vastu Vivekaha. Tavat. Nityanitya Vastu Vivekaha, which we have already seen. Nitya means eternal, permanent. Anitya means impermanent, ephemeral. Vastu means what? Substance. So, what is eternal vastu? What is permanent one? And what is impermanent? Nitya, anitya, vastu. Vivekaha means discriminative knowledge or discriminative understanding. So, nitya, anitya, vastu, vivekaha is the first qualification. The discriminative knowledge, the discriminative understanding of what is permanent, what is impermanent, what is eternal, what is ephemeral, is called, is the first qualification, this itself. And here he explains here, Brahmaiva Nityam. Brahmaiva Nityam Vastu. Brahmaiva Nityam Vastu. Tataha Anyate Akhilam Anityam Iti Vivechanam. See, the author here, the Vedanta Sara text, the author here, he says, Vivechanam. He uses another word called Vivechanam. Vivekaha, masculine gender word. Vivechanam, neuter gender word. That's all. Vivekaha, Vivechanam, Vivichya Jnanam. This alone is permanent. This is not permanent. This is clear discriminative understanding is vivekaha. So you can say discrimination between the permanent and the impermanent is the first qualification. And here, discrimination between what? Okay, permanent and impermanent mean what is permanent and what is impermanent here. How can he know what is permanent? So, what is permanent? Nityam Vastu Brahma. It must be very clear. Nityam Vastu Brahma. The permanent, eternal, beginningless, endless, changeless, indestructible, everlasting reality implied by the term Brahma, which is the reality, the truth of the whole universe, the only truth of the whole cosmos, all that is here, implied by the term Brahman alone is eternal. It is the reality, absolute reality or ultimate truth, the truth of the truth of all that is here alone is Brahman alone is permanent. Nityam Vastu Brahma. How do we know this? Can we know this through our reasoning? Through logic? Can we know this by our own experience? This, what is permanent, we know only through the Shrutihi, only through the Shastram. Only with the help of the Shastram, we arrive at this fact. Arrive at this understanding, which means when we are exposed to the study of the Shastram and we come to know this truth, the Nityam Vastu, if at all there is anything that is permanent, the only permanent thing is Brahma. We cannot know this by ourselves. Then, later on, from the same Shruti, the same scripture, we also come to know, other than Brahma, everything and anything other than that reality is anityam, impermanent. So what is permanent, what is impermanent, you arrive at, you come to know with the help of the Shastra. Later on, so when you come to know using the Shruti, with the help of the Shruti, this scripture, then yuktihi means reasoning, logic. Then you use your logic also and you understand what is impermanent. You understand what Shruti states, then the Shruti states is correct. The Shruti's teaching of everything other than Brahma being anityam, impermanent, you also understand through logic. How anything which has a beginning should have an end. Anything which has a beginning has an end. Therefore, the whole universe, if you see, everything is definitely is going to come to an end. Nothing is permanent here. You also arrive at through reasoning. Not only that, and using your own experience also, you arrive at this fact that all that is here is impermanent, ephemeral. Nothing here is permanent. So to understand everything else here, all that is here being ephemeral or impermanent, you use Shruti, you have Shruti, and you use your own reasoning, Yukti, and you also have your own experience. So Shrutya, Yuktya, Anubhavena, you know, anityatvam of everything here you understand. But Brahma nityatvam, Brahmanaha nityatvam, but the Brahman being the only eternal thing, you understand with the help of the Shruti. And even before you start here, you have Shraddha. In the sense, you accept Veda as a Pramanam. Therefore, what Veda says, it is the reality alone. Reality alone is the eternal, permanent, and everything else is impermanent. And not only that, if everything else is impermanent, and how can anything and everything which is time-bound give me a permanent, everlasting happiness? Then you understand the limitation of the anityam, the non-eternal, impermanent thing, that it cannot give you mokshaha, that what you are seeking. And Brahman, if Brahman is the only eternal vastu, and if Brahman alone can be a means of moksha, the permanent alone can give me permanent happiness. This understanding is called Nitya Anitya Vastu Vivekaha. There should not be any doubt here. Nothing here is permanent. This should be in your mind. Nothing here is permanent, is a fact. Not because somebody is telling, not because Shruti is saying. There is also reasoning involved here. There is experience also which tells me the same thing. We have our own experience. Yes, this is a fact. We don't remember. Sometimes we forget the facts. We don't pay attention to the facts. Even if we know the facts, we do not pay enough attention to these facts. Nothing here is permanent. Nothing here is permanent. If at all there is something permanent, it is Brahma. This fact, if a person remembers and he has his clear discriminative knowledge, then naturally he will have the other qualification also. Is it clear? And what is the other qualification? Aihikanam Srakchandana Vanitadi Vishaya Bhoganam Karma Janyataya Anityatvavadam Karma Janyataya Anityatvavadamushmikanam Api Amrutadi Vishya Bhoganam Anityataya Tebhyo Nitaram Viratihi Iha Mutrartha Palabhoga Viragaha. Okay, so here Aihikanam, you can read out for me. Aihikanam, say Srakchandana Vanitadi Vishaya Bhoganam Karma Janyataya Anityatvavat Amushmikanam Api Amrutadi Vishaya Bhoganam Anityataya Tebhyo Nitaram Viratihi Iha Amutrartha Palabhoga Viragaha. In Tattva Bodha we had short definitions. In Vedanta Sara we have long definitions. So Viragaha is a masculine gender word for Vairagyam. Isn't it? Viragasya Bhavaha Vairagyam. Vairagyam means dispassion. So dispassion must be definitely born of understanding alone. Dispassion cannot be forced on somebody, isn't it? Come on, become dispassionate. Okay, become dispassionate. Why are you not dispassionate? Have dispassion. Go and buy some dispassion from somewhere. You know, for dispassion, if you become dispassionate, I'll give you something. We cannot, by bribing, by trying to please people, so we cannot have dispassion. And dispassion is, dispassion, in fact, vairagyam, qualification, which comes naturally if you have the first qualification. If you have Vivekaha, then you will have second qualification. So here iha amutra artha phala bhogeshu viragaha is vairagyam. So dispassion towards everything here. Dispassion means what? So growing out of desire for anything here. And which any object of enjoyment here you gain as a result of some karma. That is why this iha bhoga artha, iha amutra artha phala bhoga viragaha. If you understand that no object of pleasure here is going to give me the permanent happiness which I am seeking, then naturally you will be disinterested in them. You're naturally growing out of desire for everything that is here, knowing their limitation, that they cannot give me what I am seeking in life, is in fact vairagyam, viragaha. And for which you must have the clear understanding, it is the permanent alone can give me permanent mokshaha. Impermanent cannot give me permanent mokshaha. Already you have discriminative knowledge, and this discriminative knowledge will definitely result in what? Disinterest in anything impermanent. So this naturally discovering disinterest towards everything, dispassion towards everything impermanent, that they cannot give me permanent moksha, what I am seeking, is called dispassion vairagyam. Not only the objects of enjoyment enjoyable in this world, which I gain as a result of my karma, even the enjoyment of pleasures, the heavenly pleasures also. While living this life, we have so many things which are available for enjoyment. Not only here, even after the death also, there are heavenly pleasures etc. which we have already studied. If a person who has purushartha nischayaha and who knows the value of knowledge and who is committed to the pursuit of knowledge and who knows it is Brahman which alone is the only permanent thing, it is the knowledge of that reality which alone will free me from bondage, which alone will bless me with the permanent happiness. Such a person will naturally grow out of desire for the enjoyment of anything here, not only here, anywhere in the universe. Even the heavenly pleasures he will not be interested. And why should we want to talk of the enjoyment of pleasures in this world? He does not have any hatred towards enjoyment of pleasures or objects of enjoyment. Nor does he have any longing towards anything here. Dispassion means neither he doesn't have, not having hate, passion or not aversion also. He doesn't have any aversion towards anything, any object here. Okay, dispassion implies not having aversion towards anything also. He has neither aversion towards anything here or the heavenly pleasures or the objects enjoyable in this world. Nor does he have any passion towards anything enjoyable here or hereafter in the heavens. Why? Because he knows nothing in this world or nothing in anywhere else is responsible or source of unhappiness. Therefore, he cannot have any aversion towards anything. Okay, dispassion implies not having aversion also. Always immediately we think, no passion, which means you have aversion towards everything. If there is aversion towards anything in the world, you are not dispassionate. So, having aversion also is what? Having aversion towards anything in the world does not make one dispassionate. If I have, I have no passion towards anything in the world because nothing can give me what I want. So I have aversion towards everything else. If you have aversion towards anything else, you are not at all qualified. See, aversion towards anything else also is as disturbing as the passion. So because you are very clear, the dispassion implies not having passion or aversion towards anything else here. Not only anything else here, even anything else existing anywhere in the heaven also. I don't want heaven. I don't go, like to go to heaven. I hate heaven. No. I have no aversion towards anything. Why? Because I know very well. The objects of enjoyment available in higher worlds, the heavenly pleasures, etc., they are not responsible for my unhappiness. So non-enjoyment of heavenly pleasures is not responsible for my unhappiness. Non-enjoyment of, non-possession or possession of any objects in this world also is not responsible for my unhappiness. Therefore, nothing is responsible for my unhappiness. This understanding, one understanding is very, very important because it helps you a lot. No human being in the world is responsible for my unhappiness. No fruit of action is responsible for my unhappiness. No action is responsible for my unhappiness. Nothing is responsible for my unhappiness. This I am very clear. One must be very clear. Therefore, it is not possible for one to have any aversion towards anything. So nothing can give me happiness also. Nothing here is a source of happiness here. This is also a fact. Understanding of this fact helps me discover dispassion towards everything else. Understand? Which means all the passion is only for the knowledge of Brahman, because it is Brahman is the only permanent thing which alone can give me permanent happiness. The only passion for the knowledge of the truth helps one discover dispassion towards everything else. Okay, this is called what? Vairagyam. That's why vairagyam must be, dispassion must be born of maturity, understanding of the fact. So dispassion born of understanding is sublimation. Dispassion born of aversion, isn't it? Is what? Suppression. Understand the difference very carefully here. The way he says, and he explains a little bit. So, aihikanam. Aihikanam means anything pertaining to this world is called aihika. The word iha means here. Iha bhoga phalam. Iha bhoga phalam means what? Iha bhoga artha, iha loka phala bhogaha. Iha loka phala bhogaha. So the objects of enjoyment attainable as a result of one's own karma as ordained by Parabdha in this world is what? Iha loka phala bhogaha. So they are said to be what now? Aihikanam. Aihikanam means of all those objects of enjoyment which are enjoyable in this world, in this life, and I'm living this life. He gave some example. Srak. Srak means, Srak actually stands for a garland, flower garland. He mentions, then Chandana. Chandanam is sandal paste. The sandal paste, the sak, the flower garland stands for all the ornamentation we like to have to decorate ourselves, to look beautiful, to look nice. Because that we derive some pleasure, isn't it? You seek pleasure through alankara, by decorating oneself also. One word, sak means just the garland, flower garland stands for, adorning oneself, decorating oneself, making all possible efforts to present oneself. It is very important to present oneself properly. That does not mean always making efforts to present oneself properly will make one happy. Isn't it? Therefore, he says, so srak, then chandanam means sandal paste. Sandal paste always is used, applied. Because one thing for you to, you'll be fragrant. So now you can, it stands for what? All the present day cosmetics, things which you use, we apply to make ourselves better, to feel better about ourselves also. Then vanita. Vanita means a woman. The one word vanita stands for all the objects of pleasures. Not only that, and all the relationships also. So any relationship with anybody, we are so particular, isn't it? Any relationship with anybody also, it stands for relationships. Vishaya bhoganam. So all these varieties of objects of pleasures, such as relationships, we try to be happy by developing relationship with people. It can be with anybody. Then we try to be pleased. So all this srak chandana vanitadi vishya bhoganam karma janyataya anityatvavat. Because any object of enjoyment is what? Is a product of action. Isn't it? Whatever we enjoy here, everything and anything you enjoy here is actually a result of action. Therefore, what about the action? Action itself is time bound. And these actions are dependent on different accessories and they're all time bound. The actions which are dependent on accessories, they are time bound. Actions are time bound. And the action bond result also is what? Must be time bound. So all these objects of enjoyment are ultimately what? So karma janyataya anityatvavat. They're all time bound in nature. Therefore, they cannot give me permanent happiness. Okay? Is one understanding. Not only the objects of enjoyment enjoyable in this world, and also amushmikanam api amrutadi vishaya bhoganam. Know this, sir. Amrutadi vishaya bhoganam means amushmikanam. Even the pleasures enjoyable in higher worlds as a result of the special karmas and upasam, etc., enjoyable after the birth, after the death in higher worlds. After the death in higher worlds, the pleasures, etc., which are enjoyable later on, even those pleasures also, we say temporary moksha we have. Apekshika moksha, which amrutadi means, even the temporary moksha, because for a long time, with a lot of punyam, you can go to higher worlds and stay there for a long time. You don't need to be born immediately because a lot of punyam. So enjoying the heavenly pleasures, staying in heaven for a long time, as long as one has punyam, is a temporary moksha. In fact, apekshika moksha, even that is also what? Anityataya, they are also time bound. You know why? Whether the pleasure enjoyable in this world or enjoyable after the death in higher worlds. An object of pleasure enjoyable here or hereafter in higher worlds. Any object of enjoyment, any object of pleasure, any pleasure enjoyable here or hereafter, they are all products of karma. Either it is, it's a kayikam karma, vachikam karma, manasam karma. You might have done, you might have practiced meditation, you might have performed rituals, you might have chanted mantras, or you might have done lot of punya karma, or social service activities. Whatever you have done, all the good karmas you have done, might have helped you earn lot of punyam. As a result of the abundance of punyam you have alone, you can enjoy the pleasures here or hereafter. I tell you this, another teaching also is here. Any smallest pleasure you enjoy, the pleasure enjoyable for a minute or for a second or for a fraction of a second or for some time or a month or a year or two or a whole life. Now, if I have a peaceful life, if you say I have peaceful life, I have happy life, I have no problems in my life, it's all only what now? This is not moksha. Sometimes life goes very smoothly, isn't it? Good wife, good children and good everything is okay, no problems. We are physically healthy, okay, things are okay for us means you are, that is not moksha. Be very careful. Even life is very smooth, everything goes smoothly also, we are exhausting the punyam. Punyam is what? Punyam, which you have earned as a result of your good karma in your previous lives. Suppose we are going to enjoy some better pleasures, heavenly pleasures later on after the death in heaven also. What happens? Also is what? Result of punyam. Without punyam, you cannot enjoy anything. Okay? Enjoyment of any little of sukham, pleasure is what? Is the manifestation of Bhagavan's grace. And to have Bhagavan's grace, to have little of pleasure, you must have had punyam. And to have that punyam, you must have done good karma. Isn't it? Appropriate karma. Therefore, whether you have performed rituals, whether you have done social service activities, or whether you have practiced meditation, whether you have performed rituals, whether you have done your nitya karma properly, you know, whether you have completely omitted all the papa karmas, somehow only by performing some karma or the other, you must have earned punyam. And as a result of punyam alone, you enjoy any type of pleasure here or you hereafter the death. Hereafter in heaven. Therefore, all those enjoyments of pleasures and the pleasures and the objects of pleasures, all of them happen to be pleasure happens to be the product of karma. Translation of your punyam earned through karma, definitely it will be time bound. It will be impermanent. Is it clear? Therefore, you decide what? These pleasures, these objects of pleasures, objects of enjoyment, available here in this world or hereafter, amushmikanam api, amrutadi, even the apek, temporary moksha, etc. All this will be time bound. Therefore, they cannot give me the eternal happiness. They cannot bless me with eternal freedom. How can a karma which has beginning, a karma which has an end, a karma produce something, a phalam, which is beginningless and endless? So, as a result also, any phalam, fruit also, fruit of action also has a beginning and an end. Whereas what I am seeking is happiness. Mokshaha, freedom from unhappiness. Happiness means what? Which should not end at all. If it's not end means, it should definitely, it must be there beginninglessly. Therefore, that eternal happiness I'm seeking, therefore, nothing can give me eternal happiness. Already you have understood, isn't it? It is this knowledge, it is this understanding born, dispassion towards everything else. It's called what? Vairagyam. In Sanskritam, vairagyam, in English, dispassion. Viragaha. Is it clear? So, vairagyam is impossible if there is no vivekaha. Viveka must be there. The vairagyam must be born of viveka. Now we'll go to the next. In fact, we have many quotations from the Shrutis, Upanishads. All the mantras, they state how a person learns from one's own experiences. After having lived in this life, this world for some years, and having achieved so many things also, one can see the limitations of his achievements, accomplishments, that they're not able to give a person what he really wants, the absolute peace and happiness. He understands the limitations of everything. In fact, Shastram says, the person whose life is a meaningful life, you know that? The one who can learn from his own life's experiences. One who learns from his own life's experiences and arrives at the fact that nothing, no achievement, no accomplishment can really make me happy. And once discovering the fact that nothing can make me happy here, and thereby growing out of desire for all of them, is dispassion. The dispassionate person is in fact a mature person. If a person can discover, the life's experiences can help a person discover dispassion, then that life is really a meaningful life. It has served its purpose. Because the dispassionate person discovers, and it will definitely help him attain knowledge later on. So, because again, the dispassionate person's mind cannot be dragged, disturbed by anything else. Okay. We'll see the next one. Now, we're going to the next discipline, next qualification called the sixfold disciplines. The next qualification involves sixfold disciplines. What are they? We'll see here. So, you can remember very well, isn't it? Discriminative knowledge of permanent and the impermanent. Then dispassion, second qualification. The third qualification is disciplines. Each word begins with a D, so it's easy to remember. Shamadi Shatka Sampattihi. Shamadi Shatka Sampattihi. The Shatka Sampattihi, sixfold wealth. The sixfold disciplines are like the sixfold, which are as good as the wealth. And here, That's what mentioned in Tattva Bodha, and here he introduced each discipline separately. Look at this. Shamadayastu. Shama adayaha tu. Shamaha adayaha. Shama adayaha. Shamadayaha. Shamaha etc. Adayaha means etc. samaha and so on, others, fivefold. Totally six. What are the, he says? Shama, dama, uparati, titiksha, samadhana, shraddhakhyaha, shamadamo parati titiksha, samadhana, shraddhakhyaha. Okay. Here also, shamaha, damaha, uparatihi, titiksha, samadhanam, shraddha. Akhyaha. The sixfold disciplines are these. He puts them in one line. Shamastavate. What is Shamaha? Look at this. First discipline is what? Shamaha. See, we are learning six disciplines in here. Six disciplines as a third qualification. Isn't it? Shamaha. So in Tattva Bodha, Mano Nigraha. Only one small sentence is here, isn't it? Mano Nigraha. The word Nigraha literally means control. But Swamiji always says very clearly, mastery over one's ways of thinking. It means having mastery over one's thoughts, mastery over one's mind. The capacity to manage one's thoughts or capacity to manage one's mind is what? Shamaha. And here, what does he say? Look at this. How can you have mastery over your mind? Okay, having mastery over one's mind or having mastery is not control one's mind, okay? Sometimes they literally translate it as mind control. Having, you know, controlling one's mind, the capacity to control one's mind. Is it a dog or cat or what? To control. To put some biscuits, tame the mind, tame the dog. You know, who are you to control your mind? Isn't it? If we can control, then what else is needed? So, we cannot control our mind. We cannot undo our mind. When I say mind, I mean thoughts. We cannot control our thoughts. We cannot undo our thoughts. We cannot destroy our thoughts. We cannot suppress our thoughts. We cannot oppress our thoughts. What can we do? Nothing we can do. We can do one thing. We can manage our thoughts. So being able to manage one's thoughts or being able to manage one's mind is what? Having mastery over one's thoughts. Being able to manage one's thoughts means avoid becoming a slave of your thoughts. Very important, okay? Carefully, prudently, intelligently avoiding becoming a slave of one's thoughts is having mastery over one's thoughts or managing one's thoughts, which is called shamaha. How can you avoid becoming a slave of your mind? How can you have mastery over your thoughts? How can you manage? In Bhagavad Gita, it is taught. Here, what is the qualification required for knowledge? That alone is said here, in this book. Having mastery over one's mind is a discipline. one of the qualifications. But how to become, how to have shamaha is not discussed here. How to have mastery over the thoughts is not said here. In Bhagavad Gita it is said very clearly. No? By consciously living a life of dharma. No way. Understand how important it is? Only by consciously, prudently, intelligently committing oneself to live a life of dharma. And that will live by only by living a life of dharma. Means living one's life in conformity with dharma. One can have mastery over one's thoughts, one's ways of thinking also. Therefore, always, now here what do you need? Dharma, adharma, viveka, buddhihi. You already have. Dharma, adharma, viveka, buddhihi, you have. If you have nitya, anitya, vastu, viveka, you will have vairagyam. If you have vairagyam, and you will have what? Definitely, you already have nitya, anitya, dharma, adharma, viveka, buddhi, you already have. You have discriminative knowledge of right and wrong. But if you have viveka and vairagyam, you will make all possible efforts to make use of the dharma, adharma, viveka, buddhi, the knowledge, to carefully choose to do the right, to avoid the wrong. Understand? So you have the vidya, see, dharma, adharma, viveka, buddhi you already have. You can use that buddhi or you cannot use that buddhi also. If you do not use that buddhi, you are a stingy miser because you are not spending, you are not making the best use of the buddhi. Krishna says in Gita, Kripanaha. Who is a Kripanaha? The one who does not make use of the buddhi which is already given to you. Don't say, I don't know right and wrong. You know right what is right, you know what is wrong. Definitely you know. If you make use of that viveka buddhi, then you are buddhiman. If you do not make out that buddhi, you are buddhihina. Therefore, here is to have shamaha, one has to make all possible efforts to live a life of dharma. The more you live your life consciously, in conformity with the values, then you are able to manage your thoughts, which means you are not slave of your thoughts. Why? Because you are not doing anything as determined by your likes and dislikes, but your actions are not dictated by your likes and dislikes, but your actions are actually determined by your knowledge of right and wrong. There's two ways, isn't it? Your actions can be dictated by your own likes and dislikes, or your actions can be determined by your knowledge of right and wrong. If your actions are determined by your knowledge of right and wrong, then you are making the best use of your willpower. If your actions are dictated by your personal likes and dislikes, then you're abusing your willpower. If you abuse your willpower, then your actions are governed by your likes and dislikes, not by your knowledge of right and wrong. Then you are a slave of your thoughts, slave of your mind. Understand? Therefore, otherwise, if you are making use of your will, you are using a knowledge of right and wrong, then your actions are governed by a knowledge of right and wrong, then you have mastery over your thoughts. Is it clear? Then all the time, consciously making all possible efforts to live a life of dharma is the only way to have mastery over your ways of thinking. It's called shamaha. And how is it possible for me always to be conscious of dharma? To be conscious of dharma, all the time to be reminded of the value of dharma. All the time you must remember your end being mokshaha. All the time I'm living this life for moksha, I'm living this life ultimately to discover moksha, all the time you have to remember that you are living this life for discovering moksha. And which means all the time you are reminding yourself of the fact that you are living this life to discover the truth of the whole as the self. You are living this life for the discovery, for discovering the truth. Because you know, discovery of the truth is the discovery of happiness. And for discovering the truth, you need to be prepared for the, mentally you need to be prepared. And for the preparation, you have no choice. You have to live a life of dharma. Therefore, all the time you should remind yourself of the importance and the value of living a life of dharma, for which you must be involved in shravanam always. Always means what? One should make all possible efforts to spend any time available for shravanam. Shravanam means what? For listening to the scriptural teaching. Shravanam is very important. One should make all possible efforts to make the best use of available time to listen to the unfoldment of the subject matter of the Shastram. A Shastra study. Because Shastra, only in Shastra Shravanam, only in listening to the subject matter of the Shastram, all the time you are reminded of the facts. Only the more you remember the facts, the more you live your life, you know, in keeping with the understanding of the facts. Therefore, this author is very serious. He says, now what, look at what he says, what Shravanam is, what Shamaha is. He says, look at what is Shamaha, he's going to say next. I'm sorry for today's disturbances, okay? It's unexpected. Now we'll plan next class, we'll announce what to do next class. Shamastavate Shravanadi Vyatiritta Vishayebhyo Manaso Nigraha. He says, Shravanadi Vyatiritta Vishayebhyaha Manasaha Nigraha. So Manasaha Nigraha, having mastery over one's mind, one's thoughts, implies withdrawing one's mind. Implies. What implied meaning is what? Withdrawing one's mind from anything and everything other than listening to the subject matter of the Shastram. Immediately we'll ask this question. Okay, that means I should do only Shravanam. Should I work or not? Should I earn or not? Should I go to toilet or not? Should I eat or not? That such question should not come here. When he says, all you have studied what? Nitya karma, isn't it? One has to do one's compulsory duties. No choice. Compulsory means you cannot say you should not do. Okay? Compulsory duties means you have to do your duties. You have to earn your livelihood because you cannot be a parasite. You know, even the government is very happy to give you benefits. But you should be conscious of not accepting and not going for it and begging with the council houses. Now, we should really make all possible efforts to earn our livelihood, definitely. Isn't it? So you should do the compulsory duties, you know what it. And in that compulsory duty, it also include what? Listening to the subject matter of the Shastram. Shravanam. I tell you, Shravanam is so important. If we do know without Shravanam, you do anything and everything finished. You cannot manage your mind. No Shastra. Okay, I'm doing everything. But I'm not doing Shastra Shravanam. You can live your life somehow. You will not die, okay? You can enjoy pleasures also. But still, you cannot have Shamaha. You cannot manage your thoughts. You cannot have mastery over your mind. It may be possible for some people to be ethical. Because naturally people are ethical. Some people are, as human beings, they are naturally ethical, means they have certain mastery over mind. Still, isn't it? What I am saying, Shravanam is very important. But all the people are not equally always ethical and righteous. Therefore, Shravanam is very important. It is the Shravanam which alone converts a human being first into a spiritual person. Because then Shastra study, the Shravanam, listening to the subject matter of the scripture, is not an academic pursuit. It is a spiritual pursuit. Because you are very clear about the Shastra being the means of knowledge. Isn't it? Then as a spiritual person, you understand the important value of living a prayerful, worshipful life. Therefore, you're a religious person as well. And as a religious person, and in the context, you also understand the importance and value of Dharma. And you really make all possible efforts to live your life in conformity with Dharma. Therefore, you are ethical as well. I've explained to you this many times before. But still, in this context, I'm saying, why? Because an ethical person maybe is merely ethical, he may not be, definitely he will not be spiritual if there is no Shravanam. And even if a person may be religious also, but he may not be spiritual. The only the Shravanam which makes a person a spiritual, religious, ethical person, thereby the one who has mastery over one's ways of thinking, one who has the capacity to manage one's thoughts. Okay, therefore he says, apart from your, in your, when he says, Shravana Vyatirikta, you know, so withdrawing one's mind from anything and everything other than Shravanam implies paying attention to Shravanam, making all possible efforts to listen to subject matter of the Shastram. The Shravanam must become the priority. Isn't it? Once a week class, we try to go. And some lame excuse, I try to miss the class also. Oh, repetition. Sometimes you feel. I tell you, the Shraddha, isn't it? Therefore, he says, the Shamaha means, I'm not saying, the teacher says, how to have mastery over one's ways of thinking. It is Shravana Adi. So, you can involve yourself in things which are supportive of your Shravanam, which are conducive for your Shravanam, so that nothing obstructs your Shravanam. Okay? You can do anything and everything, but whatever you do should be supportive and conducive for your Shravanam. It should not take you away from Shravanam. So, withdrawing one's mind from activities and things which really distract one from, distract and take one away from the listening to the scriptural teaching. That is Shamaha, he says. That's why Shravana Adi Vyatirikta Vishayebhyaha. Okay? Manasaha Nigraha. Taking one's mind away from anything which takes your mind away from Shastra. You should take your mind away from anything and everything which will take your mind away from Shastra Shravanam. This is called Shamaha. I think I made it very clear, isn't it? Even you will see in sleep, it will come to your mind. You will not forget. Damaha. Now you can remember here how this is why one word we say living a life of karma yogaha. Living a life of karma yogaha will help one have mastery over one's mind. Because there is what? We have dharma, adharma, viveka. Is it? And there we have Ishwara Arpana Buddhi, Prasada Buddhi. You are going to see all those things here now. How living a life of karma yoga will help you have all these sixfold disciplines. Okay, Damaha. What is Damaha? Bahyendriyanam. This book, the book which I am reading has a lot of print mistakes. I am sorry, I had to stop and tell you. Bahyendriyanam. Tad vyatirikta. Vishayebhyo nivartanam. Bahya indriyanam tad vyatirikta vishayebhyaha nivartanam. Now damaha, like shamaha, other discipline, what? Damaha. There we discussed the having mastery over one's mind, or withdrawing one's mind from everything which will distract your attention from Shastra Shravanam. Isn't it? So now here he says, Damaha is having mastery over one's senses, sense organs, and organs of actions. All the mastery over Indriyani. So, Manaha is called Antahkaranam. Isn't it? So, Antarindriyam. Now, the sense organs and the powers of organs of actions, all these 10 powers, they are called what now? Bahya Indriyani means external. Why is it said to be external? Mind is said to be internal. Is it? But the 5 sense powers and 5 powers of organs of actions, they are said to be external. Why? Because they serve, the sense organs serve as means of knowledge of the objects external to the mind. External world of objects. Bahya Indriyani. So, mastery over this Bahya Indriyani. What is that? He says, Tad Vyatirikta. Tad here stands for Shravanam. The author does not repeat the word Shravanam here. Tad Vyatirikta means Shravana Vyatirikta. Vyatirikta means other than, apart from. Vishayebhyaha Nivartanam. Nivartanam again is what? Nivartanam means keeping the sense organs, keeping one's organs of actions away from things which will take one away from the Shastra. You keep your senses away from things which will drag your attention, away from the Shastra. You keep your organs of actions also away from things which will take your attention away from the Shastra. Which means you involve your sense organs in perceiving objects which are supportive of your Shravanam, which are complementary for your Shravanam. So involve yourself, in actions which help you, which will contribute for your Shravanam. So, which means, if you have Shamaha, then Damaha is possible. If you have mastered your ways of thinking, then you can have Damaha. Isn't it? You can't have Damaha, but I don't have Shamaha, but I have Damaha. You cannot have mastery over your sense organs. You cannot have mastery over your senses unless you have mastery over your mind. Isn't it? The Shamaha is important for you to have Damaha. Actually, this Damaha, I'll explain when we come back next class. Is it okay? Now, today I could cover only one discipline, Shamaha. At least we started with Viveka, Vairagyam. I'm sure two qualifications you have no doubt, isn't it? The second one will be there if you have the first one. The third one involves disciplines. If you have first two, it'll be easy for you to live a disciplined life involving the sixfold disciplines, isn't it? Because when you have Viveka and Vairagyam, you know the value of disciplines. Then you live a disciplined life. Isn't it? Without knowing the value of disciplined life, living a disciplined life, if you're forced to live a life of disciplines, then following disciplines will be burden. That is when you really they feel imposed, isn't it? Really, if you say somebody, be disciplined, immediately they get angry and they'll be rebellious and then discipline imposed is a burden. But discipline followed with understanding, the value of discipline is a joy. Really. It's not because there's no pain there. Even effort may be there. Of course, effort has to be there to live a disciplined life. Efforts will be there, but there will not be pain. Therefore, Vivekaha and Vairagyam. So that's why, let us conclude this class praying to Bhagavan to bless us with Viveka Vairagyam. That is why, from childhood, in India, We always teach children before when they eat food, we say this, Annapurne Sadapurne Shankara Pranavallabhe Jnana Vairagya Siddhyartham Bhiksham Dehi Chaparvati. O Mother Goddess, please bless me with the food. Ultimately for what? Not for eating alone. Let me eat this food to live the life. Ultimately to discover dispassion and ultimately to attain knowledge and to make my life, which I live throughout eating, to make this life a meaningful, complete, successful one. Let me not live the life simply eating. Let me not die eating. Let me live dieting. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.